Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Today is the 3rd of June, 2015, and we are talking once again to Michelle Chosadovsky, Editor-in-Chief of GlobalResearch.ca. Michelle, it's been a while since we've had you on the program. Thank you for joining us once again.
Delighted to be on the program.
Well, it has been a few months since we last talked, as I mentioned, and the last time we were talking about your new book at the time, still a book that's currently available from Global Research, The Globalization of War, America's Long War Against Humanity, which, of course, talks about that long war that America and its allies of the NATO empire have been and are waging currently against the population of the world. That long war is quickly developing into a total war with multiple fronts that are really encircling the globe at this point. What can you tell us about the way this picture of global warfare is developing?
Well, first of all, global warfare is now being waged in all major regions of the world, in various forms. In some cases, it's theater wars, as in Yemen, in Syria and Iraq. It's a U.S.-sponsored insurgency, the so-called Islamic State. In Latin America, it's a process of destabilization of national economies, but also militarization, the sending in of Marines to Central America. In Southeast Asia and the Far East, it's the so-called pivot to Asia. It's a situation of provocation largely directed against China. In Ukraine, on Russia's border, it's acts of provocation directed against the Russian Federation and the conquest, essentially, of new frontiers for the global economy. In Africa, it's U.S.-sponsored insurgencies, the destabilization of national economies, the battle for oil. And largely, we're dealing with very powerful corporate actors which control and overshadow the governments. If we wish to give it some kind of structure, we're talking about, of course, the oil companies, the big oil, the Anglo-American oil companies, Wall Street, of course, which is involved in financial destabilization, what President Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex, which are the large defense contractors, the mercenary companies, the intelligence and security corporate apparatus, linked, of course, to the U.S. Military and to NATO. And then, of course, you have the media conglomerates, which are there serving the process of war propaganda, upholding a corporate agenda. And then you also have, and that's very important, you have the biotech conglomerates, big pharma. One dimension of this global war is the destruction and demise of the agricultural cycle. The fact that when you introduce genetically modified seeds into a region such as sub-Saharan Africa, you not only destroy agriculture, but you destroy biodiversity and you undermine the livelihood of an entire region. And that's happening in countries like India. It's happening throughout sub-Saharan Africa. And it is part of that global agenda. The global warfare is not limited to military interventions. It uses covert operations. It also is geared towards destabilizing sovereign governments through so-called colored revolutions, the installation of proxy regimes which will obey orders, and so on and so forth. It's a very complex process, and we have to connect, in a sense, all the different dimensions of this devastating process, which is destroying countries, transforming sovereign nations into territories, open space for corporations, impoverishing the world population, and that impoverishment is not the consequence of a scarcity of resources. It is the result of manipulation and destruction of economic and social structures and institutions.
Well, you paint a very vivid and concise picture of the total carnage and warfare that is encircling the globe in a number of different aspects, and you, I think, rightly identify it as part of the corporate government collusion, the fascistic collusion, which is at the heart of this empire of chaos that is reigning around the globe. I guess the obvious question then is, what is the next stage of this global warfare? Does it develop into hot warfare in the traditional sense, or will it remain on an economic covert operations level?
Well, I think that, in a sense, the military planners have all options on the table, so to speak, to quote Hillary Clinton. They are involved in covert operations and regime change, the destabilization of national economies, economic sanctions, but they are also contemplating the use of high-tech weapon systems, of course, including nuclear war. And I say nuclear war is not only targeted towards, let's say, Russia and China, using the arsenal of the Cold War era, in other words, the thermonuclear weapons, but it is also directed against non-nuclear states using the so-called tactical nuclear weapons. But then there are other systems, there are other areas of intervention. We know that the U.S. Air Force has command over environmental modification techniques or weather warfare. It's a controversial subject, but it's fairly well documented that the U.S. military can modify the weather and trigger environmental catastrophes. And they even use the term, and I quote, owning the weather for military use. And then you have other areas of intervention. You have biological warfare, chemical warfare. You have, of course, there's the whole area of cyber warfare, the destabilization of countries' communication systems, and so on. We're in the realm of high-tech communications. And then another area, of course, of warfare is propaganda. It's turning realities upside down. It's presenting America as the protagonist of democracy and inciting people to endorse a so-called anti-terrorist agenda when it is known and documented that these terrorist organizations, including Al-Qaeda and more recently ISIS, the Islamic State, are creatures of U.S. intelligence. And so that we are now in a situation where we support a global war on terrorism, including sectors of the progressive left, who say, well, we're against war, but we support the war on terrorism. It's a non sequitur. And within Western countries, there's also an internal war which is ongoing, which is the war of the governments and the corporations against their citizens, namely through the anti-terrorist legislation, where you can arrest people without any, just on suspicion, on alleged, because they're alleged terrorists and so on. And that trend now is evolving towards a situation of police state environment, which affects, of course, the fundamental rights of citizens. And that's happening in many countries in the West. And then with regard to the war within Western countries, you have the imposition of these deadly austerity measures. We see the situation in Greece, but it's not only in Greece. It's in countries like Spain, Italy, not to mention Iceland a few years back. And that, in a sense, is a form of internal warfare. It's based on debt conditionalities. It's the imposition of deadly macroeconomic reforms, something which has been applied in third world countries from the beginning of the 1980s, but which is now being applied in most Western countries, leading to the demise of social programs, the destruction of employment, the creation of mass unemployment, the removal of all social safety nets, and ultimately we're evolving, and I think both at the national and global level, we're evolving from a situation of poverty to despair. People, particularly if we take countries like India, where we see a whole range of suicides in the rural areas, which are largely attributable to the crisis of agriculture and the imposition of genetically modified seeds. Well, people commit suicide. In Africa, we see humanitarian disasters which are beyond, so to speak, they're beyond poverty. We're not dealing with global poverty, which was something which I researched in the 1990s. We're dealing with despair, with the destruction of livelihood, the destruction of family life, the deaths resulting from warfare, but also the deaths resulting from a process of engineered destruction of economic activity, and where poor people are no longer the right to be poor. They're marginalized and excluded. And simultaneously, we're looking at the realm of economics, we see the emergence of this upper-end luxury goods economy, which is geared towards a small segment of the population. So there's increased polarization, social polarization taking place everywhere. You won't see, if you're traveling in Southeast Asia, you won't see the poor people. You'll see avenues of hotels and condominiums and so on. So that, in a sense, what's happening is a restructuring of the fabric of national societies, where the hope of actually acceding to the status of an employee or a worker within a factory may be a dream for many people who are simply marginalized. And that is a situation even happening in countries like Spain and Greece, where, you know, up to 40% of the labor force are unemployed.
Well, in fact, we see very much that war on the poorest of the poor, even in the heart of the empire itself, with many cities trying to even make feeding the homeless a crime of sorts in the United States. So we see this being waged, and more aggressively so. I guess, then, can we see any countervailing tendencies towards this globalization of war?
Well, they are... of course, some very significant developments. If we look at the situation let's say in Greece or in Spain, where seemingly progressive governments have emerged. But I should caution in that regard, because these seemingly progressive governments are often hijacked by corporate foundations which are funding them. It's the same thing with regard to NGOs. And they ultimately are caving in to the demands of the creditors and the large financial institutions. I think what has happened in the course of the last 20 or 30 years is that the whole fabric of West, particularly Western society, where you had trade unions, you had civil society organizations, which were, in fact, and you had governments, which were putting forth a progressive a social democratic agenda. This scenario, or this landscape has been totally modified. The resistance to this corporate agenda, and we're talking about global capitalism, is no longer there. It's no longer there. It's fragmented. It's co-opted. The trade union leaders go to Davos and mingle with the corporations, the corporate leaders, so that through the process of co-optation, we see a fragmentation of civil society into different areas. Environmentalists on the one hand, anti-war on the other, women's rights, and ultimately emerging from that is a mosaic of resistance rather than an organized structure which will challenge this project. And again, we're dealing with a military agenda. We're dealing with an economic agenda which is supported by the military agenda. We're dealing with a process of destabilization of livelihood, so to speak. It's the reproduction of real life which is at stake. And I think what is extremely dangerous in this situation is that those who decide, particularly with regard to the use of so-called what we might describe as weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear weapons, they believe their own propaganda. And there's a whole current within the U.S. military, we're talking about nuclear doctrine, to the fact that nuclear weapons are, quote, harmless to the surrounding civilian population. And that refers to the tactical nuclear weapons, the mini nukes. And there are other areas there are other areas where propaganda seems to take over the people who decide. And sometimes those people mean well. They think that by doing certain things, they're going to improve the livelihood of the world population. And so that when decision makers believe in the use of nuclear weapons as a means to bring peace to the world, we're in a very, very dangerous situation. And having consulted military documents, I can say that this is true, is that they say, well, we have to use war as a peacemaking undertaking, as a means to instill democracy. And they also say that nuclear weapons might be the avenue, okay, or a certain type of nuclear weapons. And I should warn people, although this is a very complex subject, is that back in 2002, the U.S. Senate cleared the use of tactical nuclear weapons to be used in the conventional war theater, and that the whole notion that the commander-in-chief, namely the president of the United States, would actually give the green light, that has been scrapped. These tactical nuclear weapons are part of what they call the military toolbox. They can be used by a three-star general in the region or in the war region, and they're part of the arsenal of conventional warfare. Now, all those things, all those dimensions, the economic, the social, the military dimensions, coalesce and are sustained by an extensive apparatus of media propaganda. I'm referring to the mainstream media, the corporate media, which sustains the lies and ultimately controls what people think. And this is not, this I would say, is an inquisitorial environment. It's much more devastating than the Spanish Inquisition. The Spanish Inquisition was also based on a big lie, and it lasted for 300 or 400 years. But we are dealing with a media apparatus which turns realities upside down, presents the Western quest and military adventure as a peacemaking undertaking, which lies with regard to the casualties of war, which presents the war criminals as protagonists of human rights, and so on and so forth. And that in itself is the pinnacle of this system. It really, without the mainstream media and war propaganda, this New World Order agenda doesn't have a leg to stand on. And in other words, without these media lies, the military agenda, the economic agenda would collapse like a deck of cards. But and that is why it is absolutely fundamental that within the realm of independent media and alternative media, we wage a war against the mainstream media. In other words, it's a war of ideas. It is an obligation on our part to support the truth and to use truth as a means, as a weapon, to undermine the legitimacy of this global economic and military agenda, which is destroying humanity. It is global war, it is total war, and it is destruction. And it has a logic, and it's part of global capitalism. But at this stage, it is not a struggle against socialism, but it is a struggle against national capitalism. In other words, it's the global capitalist elites, mainly Anglo-American, dominated by Wall Street and City of London, the large financial centers, against competing capitalist powers, which we might name them Russia, China. China's not a communist country. China is a capitalist country, in fact, a very advanced capitalist country. And so is Iran. And so that essentially what this war involves is world domination. It's the establishment of a global economic and political system whereby countries worldwide would be subordinated to these global corporations, and where national sovereignty under national capitalism would be undermined. And the trade and investment agreements, which are being negotiated behind closed doors, are part of this agenda. They're part of this agenda, and in effect, they are the end game of this agenda. Whereby global corporations undermine and destroy national and regional corporations, in other words, bankruptcy of the entire landscape, and impose a global economic agenda throughout the world.
Well, the battle between oligarchs for global control, I think, is nothing new to human history, but the technologies that are available to actually accomplish that goal really does make this a much more important and decisive battle than it has ever been before. So that is exactly and precisely why it is so important that in the alternative media, we do battle against these forces. And that's, of course, what you're doing at globalresearch.ca. We will direct people once again to your recent book on the globalization of war, which, of course, will be linked up in the show notes for this interview as well. Michel Chossadovsky, I think we'll have to continue this conversation by looking at various aspects of this global warfare, but we'll leave it there for today. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Delighted to be on the program.